minute.
Welcome to the House of Static, where we talk to artists about their art and what moves them, with your hosts, Kilo House in Los Angeles and The Static Dive in New York.
Yeah, it's great to have you. We want to introduce ourselves just in case it's the first episode of us people are watching. So I'm Kilo House, the house part of House of Static, and this is Bob. Go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing? I'm Bob Smith, and also known as The Static Dive with my music and such. So there you go, The House of Static. This is the House of Static, and what we do here is talk to interesting people about interesting things and what they do, mostly generally with a focus on art and music, but not necessarily music and not necessarily art. And in this case today, we'll be talking to our friend Nick, who is a musician, but also a life coach and for musicians and for artists. But I'm the last of the three of us that knows much about that. So I'll pass over to Kilo. Kilo, tell us how you know Nick, and then we'll let Nick go. How about that?
Yeah, I was thinking it was kind of funny, bro, that Nick was the first person to interview me, right? So it's kind of like karma's caught up to him. Finally, now the teacher is the student or whatever, you know, like I'm getting to give you the respect back that you were the first person to ever interview me. You were the jumping off period of me learning how to be my own brand and say, and Nick actually had, if any of you have seen my icon interview, Nick had a big part in like making me seem that way, because he actually had to edit the video, if I remember correctly, himself, because they weren't portraying me the way you guys see me, because we don't edit these videos, so you get to see the real me. And Nick knows me well, so he made sure that the video, and so Nick was part of Icon Collective, which you guys have heard much about me and you know, my part in that.
That video was actually my introduction to you, Kilo, because I wrote about you on my blog before I ever spoke with you. I watched that video to see, you know, who is this guy? And then here we are a year later.
Yeah, so Nick worked in the, when I joined Icon, he worked in like, didn't you work in the media department of Icon or the, what do you call that? The branding department?
Yeah, that was part of what I did over there. We created, well, that side of it was, I guess, just marketing, we could consider it. But yeah. I helped with marketing. I helped with branding. I taught music business. I taught art of flow. I was basically like a career counselor for the students, helping them get opportunities and gigs and stuff. So I was kind of a jack of all trades over there, but definitely, yeah, helping produce the videos. That was one of the funnest things. Cause that was such a cool creative process.
I remember when you asked me and you brought me outside and you were like, bro, I got to talk to you about something. I'm like, oh, fuck, what did I do? I don't do bad things. I did something wrong. But then you asked me, and I was like, that's dope. So, yeah, I mean, that's how we know Nick. We wanted to bring Nick in because we feel like he has a very valuable view of the industry and, like, different sides that we as artists, we don't see what Nick gets to see on a daily basis. And we kind of want our audience, you guys, to see that, like, see the other side of things too. So don't you agree, Nick, because you're an artist, because Nick plays guitar, he was in a metal band and when he was younger and stuff, and I think, Nick, you can tell me if I'm correct, do you think it's different, like, being an artist as seeing it from your point of view,
being an artist in what regard?
Do you see art and music in a different way now that you see it from that side too, rather than just the side of I'm an artist?
I think there's an important distinction to make, which, you know, like for myself, I suppose I could call myself an artist.
Right, you're still an artist.
I dabble. You know, I'm a hobbyist. I sit down, I'll play the guitar, and I'll produce a little bit for fun. So, am I an artist or am I not, right? Like, where is that line drawn? Because a lot of times I think when we talk about being an artist, what a lot of times people are talking about are people that are pursuing art, like, as a career.
Sure.
And want to really, like, even the idea of releasing art and sharing art, right? Mm-hmm. So I think there's a whole scale and there's a whole spectrum of somebody like myself where, like, yes, I'm an artist. I'll tinker around and I'll make some music when I feel inspired, and I'll jam and I'll have fun with it. Mm-hmm. But right. I don't have a brand. I don't put anything out. I don't release anything. I don't really share anything. I just create for fun when I want to. And then right. There's the whole other, everything in between that. And anyone, you know, the other side of the scale is somebody that is like, I'm an artist. This is my career. Just like I right. identify as I'm a life coach, or I'm a right. banker, or I'm a right. scientist. It's like, right. this is right. the I am is the identity of what I'm doing as a vocation. Right. Yeah. And so that's a very wide scale of like everything that could be in between. So when we talk about an artist, it's really like, well, what does that even mean in the first place?
Yeah. Well, you know, I like that, everything you just said about that, because I think that, like, I've had this conversation with a lot of people over the years. My kid is an artist, draws and does, like,
he did our logo.
Did our logo, oh,
yeah.
right?
If you guys like and, our logo, he yes. summed it.
Right. So we have these conversations a lot. And, you know, in my opinion, if you make something and you call it art, it's art. You know, you're an artist if you make art. And if you say, I made this, it's art, damn it, then it is.
Right.
There was a great graffiti artist. I don't know if they ever found out who it was, but it was sort of a Banksy kind of character, right? But it wasn't Banksy. It was somebody else. Going around the Northeast and just stenciling, like using a stencil that just said, not art. And put that stencil on, it's spray painting on anything, right?
That's
and
awesome.
I have somewhere in my photos, in my I have a picture of, you know, Kenny Bunkport is in, it's a town in Maine, and that's where there the Bushes have a big compound there, the Bush family. And I've been there. I mean, not to the Bush's house. They're not friends or anything. But I've driven by there, right? And you could kind of park on the side of the road and look at the ocean. It's beautiful there. And right by the Bush's house in the rocks, somebody climbed out to the rocks. So this guy or girl, whoever it was, went out with their stencil and spray painted on one of those rocks. Not art. And then like, so the awesome. Question, the whole point of it is to say, like, is that art now? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He's saying, like, right. you know, he's making us question what is art. And I think it is right on.
Well,
you know,
well,
I think,
go ahead, Nick.
I was just going to say, I think that's a great place for any artist, any person that's listening to this right now, a great place to start is to begin the process of letting go of what you think an artist is supposed to be or do or look like or create.
Yeah, right.
Because this is the biggest trap that most artists fall into, is we look at people that we admire or we look at people that are succeeding and we're like, oh, well, that's what it's supposed to look like. That's what I'm supposed to look like. That's what I'm supposed to do. So then we actually really box ourselves in to trying to sort of fit into this very narrow scope where realistically art is unlimited. There are no boundaries,
right.
And you are sort of a special, unique snowflake on this planet that actually has your own special thing and gift that you get to bring. So it's as much as we want to take inspiration from people, we also have to be very careful, I think, to not get attached to boxing ourselves in or trying to put ourselves into this identity of what we think an artist is supposed to be.
Right. Stop trying to be something else and just be what you are and create, you know what I mean? And you know, don't concern yourself so much with like, what do other people label this?
Right.
Fuck other people.
Right. And that,
this is what
and
I'm
doing.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, and the EDM artist, I kind of can attest to that. Like, you kind of listen to other people's music and you think of what you should sound like, because all we do is make sounds in our computers all day. If you guys don't know what we do, we sit on a little laptop making crazy sounds and calling it art, right? But like, it takes a weathered veteran to learn to not listen to other music and think I need to emulate that, but to let whatever you make come out of your insides and kind of puke onto the page, per se, of like, this is how I sound as an artist,
right.
type of thing.
There's also another angle to this though as well, which is like, when you're starting out and you are just you know, you're just learning your chops, it's like when you start learning the guitar, you usually don't just start making up your own songs from day one.
Right.
You learn your favorite band's song, And right. you're like, oh, cool, I can play this like Metallica riff, or I can right. play, you know, whatever that first song was that you learned. And then you build from there and you kind of formulate your own style eventually. And I think it's the same thing with producing too. It's like, okay, well, you learn some of the math and science and some of the rules and some of the familiar sounds. And it's like, okay, cool. Let me like just learn what the hell all these buttons do before I need to like totally, you know, I can't actually express my own voice and express my own sounds until I learn the technical aspects. And so actually, kind of emulating and copying other people in the beginning just to learn the technical aspects is great. But at some point it's like, you know, you get to really break free from that. And then again, that whole point I just made might actually be entirely wrong too. And maybe you don't have to do that. And maybe you start off figuring shit out and doing the wrong thing from the beginning and playing the guitar upside down and with your teeth, and you find your own angle that's totally different from day one. Like, who knows?
But, and then you're Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
And then you're Jimi Hendrix. They light that shit on fire.
I think it's a balance between the both, right? For instance, for me, which is kind of the opposite of what you're saying, but I tried to emulate people a long time and I never could sound like anybody else. I never, ever got it right. I could get it close. I could play the right notes, but it never felt the same way. So I gave up on that completely and did my own thing, right? But I did. You're right. I did sit there and try to play, you know, write a song like Animals, you know, by Martin Garrix or something. Like, that's a good example of it. I literally sat there and plugged in the right notes, figured them out by ear back then, and like plugged them in because I didn't know you could find MIDI notes. But anyways, you know, so you're right. I think it's a mixture. It's never one or the other. It's a spectrum. You're somewhere in there.
And that's what I usually describe the difference between being an artist and being a producer. Or in this case, we could also associate a producer and a musician. The difference between being an artist and being a musician, or being an artist and being a producer, because music is mathematical. There are a certain you know, number of beats in a measure. There's a certain number of notes in a scale. And if you figure out the mathematical formula, you can like intellectually calculate how to make great music, right? There's a formula behind it, and that's great. And I think that's when you are being a producer, and it's very technical, it's very intellectual. If somebody says, hey, make this type of music at this tempo, and you can just do it, right?
Right.
Cool, you're great. Right. Or if somebody gives you a bunch of sheet music, as a good musician, you can look at the sheet music and just play it exactly how it's supposed to be played. Mm-hmm. And that's beautiful. And that's like, that's so rad, and it's so important. And people have great careers being producers and being musicians. And the difference is, when you are an artist, is you are actually really creating something from your heart and from your soul that is uniquely yours. It's self-expression. It's something that you're not just, it's not the math and science anymore. It's not just coming from the head and the mind anymore, but it's coming from your soul. It's coming from your emotions. Right. So I like to break it up, and it's like, in order to be a great artist, you also should be a good producer or a good musician and really know your craft as well. You don't necessarily have to. I think there's also great artists out there doing, you know, really weird, crazy shit that aren't actually technically proficient whatsoever. But, you know, there is a difference between the two. And I think ideally, to be great at both would be a good thing to aim for.
Right.
Right.
You're basically talking about the difference between being like a technician or being, you know, like, or being an artist. Right. And they're not mutually exclusive. You know, you can and should probably be some version of both, whatever works for you. It's funny, before you got here, Nick, we were, Kilo and I were just kind of, you know, cause we just talk all the time. We were just talking about sort of this, really, cause we were talking about how we learned how to play and how to make music. And, and I was saying how, like, first thing I ever did was I taught myself my version of music theory, right? I learned a major scale, then I learned how to harmonize that scale, so I knew all the chords in it. And then I realized that's the mathematical formula, is that every other scale is just some version of that. You know, you want to play a minor scale, you start on a different note. It's the same freaking scale. And almost every scale is like that. There are different modes and everything, your Dorians and Mixolydians and all that. They're really, but that had nothing to do with art. It had to do with me learning the technical details of being a musician. And once I had that, my goal was to, you know, be Bob Dylan, right? So I wanted to write songs. So, but I had to first figure out what chords went together so I could make those songs that made sense. And so there you go. That's that well, real world example of what you're talking about, I guess.
Nick, why don't you give our audience and viewers a little rundown of your journey in music, right? So kind of starting from being in bands to working in the music industry to where you're at now being a life coach.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's definitely been, man, it's been a long journey. You know, I originally wanted to play the guitar when I was probably like 9 or 10 years old. But my hands were so small, I couldn't play the acoustic guitar that my dad had and gave to me. So I was like, you know what, I'll play the drums instead, and picked up a pair of drumsticks and just found that way easier to just hit things and instantly, you know, make noise. And, picked that up. So the drums were a huge part of my life for a long time, but throughout, you know, from 10 years old all the way till I graduated high school, through high school, I was very, very involved as an artist. I would do jazz band as a zero period before school started. And then I would do the marching band and drum line. And then, I played drums in like a heavy metal band afterwards. So I was playing drums like 6-7 hours or more a day. And I also picked up the guitar along the way. I learned how to produce in high school, started making beats, was even rapping with like a friend. So I was very heavily involved in music. And at that point though, you know, I had a very deeply sort of programmed, deep sort of programming in my mind that like, in order to be successful, I was going to have to go to college. For me, that was really my ticket out. I grew up in kind of like a broken home, wrong side of the tracks type of situation. And so I was like,
where are you from anyway, Nick?
I'm from Santa Rosa, just north of San Francisco, up in Sonoma County. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so I was like, you know what, like college is my ticket out. Like, this is how I'm going to get out of this situation. So I was like, let me just take that path. And you know, it's something, to be honest, I think that's why I'm so passionate about working with artists and helping them chase their dreams and helping them achieve their goals, is because it's something that I didn't do at that young age. I didn't have the support and the mentorship and that voice guiding me to say, hey, like, you should really pursue this. Like, you're actually really good at this and you could do something with it. You know, in my mind, I was like, yo, I gotta go to college and I gotta make something of myself. And I gotta take that sort of normal template path that we're handed. And, you know, I don't regret it, because it did allow me to go on and, you know, establish myself. But I spent 4 years in college just like, very lost. I wasn't interested in any of the subjects. I wasn't passionate about any of it. I ended up getting like a business degree, but it wasn't until right as I was graduating, and I still didn't know what I wanted to do, my friend's dad pointed out, like, look, you got this business degree, but you also really love music. That's your passion. So why don't you put those two things together and go work in the music business? I was like, oh shit, that is a great, that makes perfect sense. Yeah. I was like, that's totally
wonderful.
It.
So,
right on.
Yeah. I literally, I just like, packed my bags. I had one buddy that like had just moved to LA, and I called him up. I'm like, bro, I'm coming after you, man. Like, I'm coming down. Mm-hmm. And moved to LA. Yeah, didn't know anybody, but just kind of hustled and networked. Like, I'm a very social person, especially at like 22. I was just like such an extrovert and was, you know, all into just down to network with anybody, and just kind of hustled my way in, got my foot in the door at Capitol Records. And so that's where I started my career. And it was a huge opportunity. Got to work for like a really big executive there, got to meet, you know, a ton of people, make a ton of relationships. And I was always like a rock guy, but after moving to LA, like, I had started listening to electronic music. Just, I don't know even how that started, but I just thought it was cool. It was like trance music and stuff, like started catching my ear. I think as like a metalhead, I was into a lot of like European melodic based type of like death metal. And I actually found that transitioned actually very much into the, you know, European trance type of stuff.
Say, that's a pretty easy slide from the Euro metal to Euro techno stuff.
Exactly. Cause it's very technical and it's very melodic. And so to me, I was like, this is just like electronic version. They're doing it on the guitar. These guys are doing it on synthesizers, but the melodies were what were really attractive to me. So I'd started listening to dance music, and then, you know, living in LA, it really was like one of the biggest like electronic music hubs. And this is 2008, 2009, like right before the wave really hit. So on the one hand, I started going out to raves and started going to shows and really getting immersed in that culture. And then at my day job at Capitol Records, our parent company was based in Europe. It was EMI. So they were actually ahead of the curve on this electronic music thing. So they signed David Guetta, they signed Swedish House Mafia, and they had a merch and touring deal with Deadmau5. And so all of a sudden we had these projects popping up for us to start working in America. And I was like the first one to raise my hand. I'm like, oh, I'll go help with this Swedish House Mafia, right, you know, thing. I'll go work with this David Guetta guy. And everybody else was like, this shit is weird. We don't know what this is, like what this electronic music is. So I earned myself the nickname Fist Pump at Capitol, because I just be like, you know, listening. Yeah, every day I was just like getting so into it. And everyone thought I was crazy. But, you know, 2 years later, DJs were the new rock stars. And yeah. And so I left Capitol because I was like, this is really what I want to do. I want to get into this like electronic scene. And so worked with like a couple different managers, got my feet wet, managing acts. No one ever really big. Like I worked with the manager, the Black Eyed Peas, for a little while, but I was working with just kind of some of the smaller artists. But then that was when I met the owners of Icon Collective Music Production School. And, you know, at that time I was really calling in, like I was having fun managing, but it was also the whole, you know, there's a lot of drama and politics and ego and the sort of dark side of like the industry of just like, I was like babysitting drunk DJs, you know, I was like, this isn't really actually what I was wanting to do. Yeah. And I was like, I'm more into the art and the creation and people that are on like a higher level consciousness kind of wavelength. And I met the owners of Icon and I was like, yo, these guys are onto something really special. And they were just, super spiritual, like just very woke, very, very cool, very much just speaking my language at that time. And we hit it off really well. And they invited me to work for them. And then, you know, kind of, I would say the rest is history. I was with Icon for 7 years. Over the last couple years, the big transition for me, I came in as the music business guy. That was kind of why they brought me in. They're like, hey, you know the business, so why don't you come in and teach the music business classes? I like rewrote the entire music business curriculum. So I was always kind of like the industry guy at Icon for a long time. Yeah. But then really where things shifted for me was the one of the owners invited me to start teaching the art of flow. And the art of flow is Icon Collective's secret sauce. That is a class that's about creativity. And it's pretty much, it like hits on philosophy, psychology, and spirituality, and talks about this sort of enigma concept of creativity, right? And so when I started teaching that, it shifted everything. I kind of stopped caring about the business and I started getting way more into the deeper, you know, psychological, human, spiritual side of things. Right. And, you know, that really took over me. I started living my life even a bit differently at that point. And, basically what happened was students started coming up to me and asking me to mentor them. And I wasn't a mentor, like officially, you know, within the program, but basically on the side, like each quarter, I would take on a student and do some weekly meetings. And they were like, I remember the first guy was like, hey, I want you to mentor me. I was like, dude, I don't know how to produce music. Like I'm not a mentor. He's like, no, I want you to mentor me on the life stuff. Right. I was like, oh shit. And for years I had had this calling to become a life coach, but it was something I kept ignoring and I kind of kept pushing to the back burner and I had no idea how I was going to do it. And this was that moment where the universe was literally like, hey, people are literally asking
are
you
to you and saying, yeah, we need you to be a life coach.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The universe is done waiting for you. Yeah. You need to get on it.
That was it. Yeah. I was like, that's shit. Awesome. All right. This is the sign, man. This is the sign. So for the last 2 years while I was at Icon, I started coaching and mentoring. And that started turning actually into a business. I would, you know, I didn't work with any current students, but if people graduated and they wanted to continue working with me, I started picking up clients through that. And then, after 2 years of doing that part-time, I left and just, went full-time with it. And it's been, two and a half years of just full-time coaching now.
I can remember when I overheard, I don't know if our audience knows this, but I'm a licensed life coach. I'm not a practicing life coach, but I remember I'm sitting there like tired after the day drinking coffee or something. And Nick was, I remember vividly getting a cup of coffee and he's talking to another student who also has a life coaching degree and saying he wanted to get into life coaching. And I was like, oh, what's up, bro? Like, I'm a life coach, you know, and I remember like going home and getting all my material together.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring this to him and being like, wow, this was not a waste of my money. Because for the longest time, I knew I wasn't going to do that. Kind of like you knew you wanted to do it.
Yeah.
I knew I didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
I knew my heart wasn't there. And so I was like very happy that like I could bless somebody with that coming from me being like, okay, I didn't waste my time. I didn't waste my money. So,
yeah, Kilo hooked it up. He comes to school one day with just like a stack of like materials of like books and binders. He's like, here you go, dude. He's like all his stuff from his coaching program. I was like, oh yes, you are the man. So that thank you.
Right. You know, one of the things that one of the big reasons, the thing that kind of drew Kilo and I together to be friends to begin with is a lot of what you're talking about. So we have a similar philosophical views on a lot of things, right?
Yeah.
And right in line with a lot of what you're, because I'm a lifelong sort of amateur Taoist, right? And I'm big into Taoism, always have been. And
cool.
And then later, obviously Zen Buddhism, which is, you know, it's just Taoism and Buddhism kind of smashed together, you know?
Oh yeah.
Before we talked to you, you know, I did a little research. I watched a couple of, similar interviews like this that you have done, right? And I watched, there was one thing where you were talking to, I don't know what it was, but it was like five or six different people you were talking to. And it kind of back to the beginning of what we were talking about and also just what you just described, it really kind of clicked with me. You were talking about how some musician was saying like how they were paralyzed because they were so nervous all the time about the future of their career and like what was going to happen. And if I stop doing this, if I give up my day job, then I'm going to fail and blah, blah, blah. And you made the point and just said, stop thinking and existing in the past or in the future, be in the moment. And which was, you didn't say the word Zen, but this is Zen Buddhism. Exist in the moment and do the thing you're doing and do it well. And that's what you need to do. And that's how you, whether you succeed or fail or whatever is irrelevant. It's success is doing what you do well. That's the thing. So just focus on that. And that mentality kind of is in line with what you were just saying. It's also kind of, like I said, what would kind of made Kilo and I become friends. So I think I'd like to thank you for some of that. For Kilo.
Right. Isn't that one of the tenets of Buddhism? Like, if you're a street sweeper, be the best street sweeper you possibly can be. Like, whatever you do, do that with all of your energy. And that's kind of what I think you guys are talking about. It's kind of, if you're going to be an artist, give it all to that and don't give in to your worries. Because I know I used to have anxiety and stuff, and I had to realize my worries aren't ever going to be, never going to play out the way I think they're going to.
Right.
It might be worse. It might never happen.
Yep.
But like anything good, when you think that you're going to have the best date of your life, it's never going to turn out that way. It might not be bad. It might be better than you thought it could be, but it's never going to be the same, you know?
Right.
And I think that's one thing Nick probably can talk about this more, but that helps you not be paralyzed. It's like not going, you know, into that place where you're like, oh no, like, what is it going to be in the future? Like, what Nick was saying.
No matter what, you're going to be wrong. You're going to be wrong in the future.
Right. You're never right.
It's hard though. It's hard though. I teach this stuff. I practice this stuff and it's still fucking hard. Like just being human, you know, we have this part of our brain that, it is the ego. It's the self-protective mechanism that is like on the lookout for danger. It's like, I want to try to find any potential danger so I can protect myself from it.
Right.
And so, you know, and I think when we were, you know, whatever millions of years ago, when we were like primitive still, there was danger to look out for. Like we developed that very deep intrinsic part of our brain to look out for saber-toothed tigers and danger in the jungle, right? Or whatever.
Yeah.
now we don't have that, but that part of our brain is still there. So we're still looking for danger. And since we don't see it, we just create it. It's like, oh, well, this could happen.
Right.
This could happen. Right. So I better not take any risk. I better not take any chances. Let me just play it safe. Cause I might fail, or I might get rejected, or I might, you know, whatever. We still have it. We all still have it. And it's a hard thing. It's like, I don't know. I'm working on it. You know what I mean? Like, I think maybe if I climb on a mountaintop and like meditate for 10 years straight, like maybe I'll be able to conquer it. But you know, all still human. And that is a thing. As much as I help people work on this, I also do remind people like, hey, it's shit's going to happen too. Like, we are human and we have fears and concerns, and like our brain does really weird, crazy shit. And so like, it's okay. Like, don't, you know, like just come back to your center, come back to,
that's
you
why,
know, the truth.
Yeah, that's why the real Buddhist monks, right? They don't just like get to enlightenment and just kind of hang, you know what I mean? They have to do this every day. Like they, because their brains are still human brains, and they want to be, their brains want to be anxious. Their brains want to worry. Their brains want to be, they want to regret. They want to feel bad about the things they said and did and thought. And they have to center themselves constantly because, you know, humans are broken. I mean, we're not ready, you know?
And we are now living in an age where most people are addicted to social media, including myself, right? Where we're spending like a lot of time looking at what other people are doing, specifically looking at the highlight reels of how people are succeeding, right? We're just seeing how everybody is like kicking ass and celebrating and looking hot and achieving
their goals.
Everybody's
gorgeous on Instagram.
Everybody's gorgeous, right? It's just like all you know. And so we are, I think that has actually in an exponential way increased that part of our brain looking at like, oh damn, everyone else is killing it. Everyone else is doing so well. Everyone else looks so great. So like, I better get to work, or I'm going to just feel bad about not being there yet. So that's such one of the biggest challenges I think that everybody has to work through. And, you know, I've had a lot of conversations with, you know, even my like friends that are successful artists, that they are touring and they are making money and they are doing really well. One of the biggest things that they all struggle with as well is just like, dude, like getting hooked on social media, or like, you know, having you know, negative feedback or people hating on them, or, you know, seeing what other people are doing, who's getting a bigger show. It's like, nobody really is immune from it. And so I think that this is where the practices come in of like, yeah, let's practice some of these Zen Buddhist techniques of just like anchoring ourselves. Let's get present. Let's just like tune inward and just remember like, hey, actually like everything's fine. And I'm okay. And let me just be present. Like there, you know, I'm not in any danger, and I'm doing really well, you know? And that's something that I have a lot of my clients do, is to kind of counteract the natural tendency of our brain and our mind that goes towards looking at what we don't have yet, and looking at how comparing ourselves to other people. Comparison is such a big thing, right? And we're really good at shitting on ourselves. And so in order to combat that, I usually have people do like intentional practices around like, okay, well, hey, look, celebrate yourself every single day. Anytime you do anything good, celebrate yourself. Like, highlight the shit that you are doing well, and like make it a habit and a culture and a process of celebration. And I have people that check in daily with me, and they like, I'm like, you have to like check in every single day and tell me what you're grateful for and tell me what you love about yourself, just so that it starts rewiring the brain to focus on the positive. Right. And really big on like, you know, like visualization practices as well. Like every day, sit down for 10 minutes, put on some of your favorite music and visualize your day working out the way you want it to. Right. Or your life, or the next, you know, like visualize yourself hitting your goals, visualize yourself, you know, living the life that you want to live, because usually our brain is focusing on what we don't want to have happen. Right. And it's causing all of this fear and this worry and this anxiety. And if we actually put some of these practices into place, then we can kind of like rewire ourselves to start looking out for the positive and what's the best that can happen rather than what's the worst that can happen.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, I mean, I definitely had to overcome that barrier in my career, because I always was thinking that way. And the one thing that it kind of helped me, I don't even know if I heard it or read it or I just came up with it, but was that I would reach a certain place that I never thought I'd get. Like, I got a song signed, or I got a song on Spotify or whatever, And then I would look back at those moments where I'm in my garage producing and go, man, life was easy back then. Like, that was the day when I could do whatever I wanted and have no deadlines. And I'm like, I learned to enjoy the moment now because I know in the future it's going to be a different struggle and it's going to be harder. And I'm going to always look back in the past and go, that was dope. I love when I just got to go to Icon every day and that was my responsibility rather than phone meetings and this song has to come out and that. So I don't know. I mean, that's what helped me was going, now is going to be the next awesome thought
right.
in the future.
And also, like, celebrating your wins are so big, like celebrating the success that you are having in that moment and celebrating every little tiny milestone that you are hitting, I think is super important because a lot of times, you know, we get there and then we're so anxious to just move on to the next thing. Yeah. Like, okay, cool. Like I got that track out or I got signed or whatever.
This,
okay,
it's cool. Not good enough.
Like, it could have been better. You know, I just noticed, I just had this happen with myself where in November last month, that was my best month financially ever. Like I fucking crushed it and like completely like made more money than I've ever made in my life. And right away I was like, okay, I need to do that again next month. You know, I was like already, right. I was already, okay, but now what am I doing for December? You know, I was like, yeah. How am I going to keep this going? And I was like, wait, let me fucking pause, celebrate this shit. Enjoy like, let me man. Like put on some music and dance and feel good and drink some champagne and like anchor it in to my body to remember that like, yes, this is available to me at any time, but we can't skip over that very important part of celebrating.
Go ahead, Bob.
I was going to say one thing I was thinking about is that, you know, again, before you got here, Nick, one of the funny things Kilo and I were doing, we were comparing notes, basically our own versions of ADHD, right? And the reason I bring it up, and it was funny, you know, but anyway, the point of it is that, you know, musicians, artists in general, any kind of artist are, you know, in my experience, I mean, then again, almost everyone I know is some form of artist, right? A musician or writer, a painter or whatever. But anyway, they're whacked. You know what I mean? Musicians are crazy, you know, and it's whether it's because we're artists, we're deeply more in tune with our emotions, we're more in tune with what's going on in our crazy brains, or maybe we became artists because we have crazy brains. I don't know. Right. You know what I mean? But I do know that your job is going to be harder than a normal life coach's job because you're dealing with even more whacked out people. You know what I mean? There are people that are, or their business is getting in touch with their brains. You know what I mean?
Right. Let me point something out around this though. I'll put the coaching hat on just for a minute.
Right.
Everybody is whacked out.
Yeah. Right on.
You know what I mean? Like if you're a CEO of a company, like, yo, you got some shit going on too. Right. You're a single mom trying to like hold it all together. You got some shit going on too. Yeah. Nobody is free from challenges and problems and like crazy shit happening in their head. I don't care who you are. But here's the thing though, too, is this is something I think to look at is that artists also identify as, oh, I'm an artist, so I'm kind of weird and crazy and don't have my shit together. And like my brain works a little bit differently. Right. This is almost, it's like a crutch. It's like the sort of perpetuating stereotype that a lot of artists actually adopt. But what if we broke free from that and let that go? One of the biggest things that hold artists back is the idea of like a starving artist of like, oh, well, because I'm an artist, I'm supposed to not be, you know, very financially successful, or I'm supposed to be a little bit crazy, a little bit weird, not really have my shit together, be a little bit messy, be a little bit promiscuous, or whatever this idea is that we attach to artists, which is just some external programming,
right?
You know? So my invitation is like, well, let's actually just let all of that go. Because underneath all of it, everyone's human. Everyone has their own weird fucked up shit that they're trying to work through anyways. Right. But this is one of the greatest things. And I take this away from, Julia Cameron's book, The Artist's Way is a really, really powerful, like 12-week, workbook and course that she created. But a lot of it is around like, how do you see yourself? as an artist, because our identity is really, really big. If we see ourselves in a certain way, we are always going to align our lives and our reality to back up that identity. So when we actually start working on this deeper level of changing our identity, how do we see ourselves?
Right.
Like, you have to see yourself as being that really successful person that has their shit together and is killing it, if you ever want to actually be it, right? Because you can work on the actions all the time, but if underneath that, your self-image as an artist is someone that is still like, I'm a little bit weird and crazy and don't have my shit together, then like, it's always going to be kind of like out of alignment.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. So what that makes me think of, right, is that so for instance, like I'm pretty old. I'm older than both of you guys. I'm 51 years old. So I've been, you know, and I've been both a professional musician, and this is what I do now. I'm a writer and a musician. That's what I do for a living now. But I've worked in the corporate world for a long time and had a good job and everything. But anyway, what I'm getting at is that your point about your view of yourself ultimately and how you view yourself is what defines what you are, right? And this, like, I jokingly for decades would call it, no matter what I'd achieve, people would compliment me and do it. And I was pretty successful and did some things, you know, but in the end, I would always just kind of end it with like, I'm just a paperboy from upstate New York, you know, because that's who I am, right? That's where I come from. And that's the truth is, that's what I viewed. I viewed myself as just a paperboy from upstate New York, and everything else was just, I was just smoke and mirrors. I'm a charlatan and I'm faking it.
Totally.
And the reality is, no, I'm not. You know what I mean? I'm pretty good at some stuff and I'm good at, and I do it and I do it well, and I should feel good about myself. But it took me, you know, 30 years to figure that out.
Yeah, no, right. I'm working through, you know, and this, I think a lot of this does all stem from childhood, right? Like for a lot of us, you know, for me, I'm a poor kid from the other side of the tracks.
There you go. Yeah.
And that's some deeply rooted identity that I'm like very consciously trying to work on breaking through.
Right.
Cause I'll even notice that, like, even when it comes to like success or finances, like I'll get to a certain point, but then it's like a thermostat where it's like, okay, if you believe you are a certain type of person that only deserves a certain amount of success, then even when you start to get more, you will unconsciously sabotage yourself to come back to wherever that thermostat is set. So if you're just a paper boy from, you know, from New York, then like you can have like the biggest opportunity waiting for you.
Yep.
But if you don't feel like you deserve that or can handle that, it's like that little inner child still, is holding on to this level of smallness. And so this is when we get into the really, like, this is the real deep, like, life coaching shit, you know, is when we can really start to change that deep level, break through these old patterns and stories, and just being conscious of it is the first step, you know.
I think getting down to it when you're younger is tremendously valuable, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, you know, my 17 year old son is an artist, and banner's running. Oh geez, I might, hold on,
right.
Talk amongst yourselves. I gotta plug in. I'm not plugged in.
Also, Nick, I think on that point, you can also use it to your advantage, because I think that's how I became a producer, coming from not liking EDM at all to being at Icon in 6 months from then, or whatever it was. I said to myself, I want to be a producer, so I identified what I wanted to be. But then I said, what would a producer do in this instance? Even though I didn't necessarily know the right answer, I started thinking in every way of my day, should I eat this? Is that what a real producer would need?
Yeah.
You know, just even to the little things of when I slept, I thought, if I want to be a producer, I'm going to emulate the lifestyle of what I want to be. So you can also use that to your benefit of like figuring out, don't make a new wheel if it ain't broke, whatever the saying is, you know, like,
reinvent the wheel, right? Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Don't reinvent the broken wheel. Yeah. So, you know, you can use it to your own benefit as well if you have the mindset of doing that, of like, I literally faked my way into being a producer. I just thought of being a producer all day, and so I suddenly eventually was a producer.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Right on, man. And like I said, the benefit, you know, I guess what I was getting at is that the idea that you did that young, you know, you did that in your 20s, and that's right. That's immensely valuable, because let me tell you, it's hard to figure things out on your own for a few decades. You know what I mean? Issues right. drinking and everything else. So I don't do any of that anymore, but you know, you beat yourself down. You know what I mean? It yeah. reminds me of, you ever heard of the band The Replacements? They're a rock band from the 80s, and they're like my favorite band ever, but they're, you know, they're just grungy kind of, you know, punk rock kind of, but the lead singer, Paul Westerberg, is like a genius songwriter. Anyway, the point is, they're famous for sabotaging themselves. Like, they were like this band that just, they were all the critics, you know, all the people that knew something about, like, you know, alternative rock in the 80s knew that The Replacements were the best band around, but The Replacements thought they were losers. And right. so they every time they got on TV, they got wasted before they got on TV. So they just sucked. Yeah. You know what I mean? And every yeah. time they got a top 10 record, they get arrested or something. You know, they just wrecked everything every time.
Right. Yeah.
And it's this, and they were learning the wrong way, the hard way, and it took it too long. You know what I mean? And eventually they fell yeah. apart. So
yeah. Think about, for every successful artist that we know and love, think about the 100 others that right. were probably just as good,
sure,
but didn't believe in themselves or sabotage themselves in some way, or didn't just, you know, have the support that they needed.
Yeah.
You know, right. it right. takes a lot. It takes a lot to make it work. But the one thing that we can all definitely work on is our belief and how we see ourselves, you know, yeah. like I like this idea that you will see it when you believe it. Because usually right. people say, "Oh, I'll believe it when I see it."
Right.
Like,
right.
All right. If I see it, okay, then I'll believe it. But like, mm-hmm. no. You will see it when you believe it. So start working on that belief.
You believe right? it.
Like, right. yeah. Like Kilo was saying, like, okay, I believe I can do this. So like, yeah, who do I need to be? What does a producer right. think right. like? You know, yeah. what kind of thoughts do they have? What kind of habits and actions do they take? Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
But like, getting anchored into that belief is such an important part. You know, you can work on all the other shit, but if you don't, you know, a lot of times this is literally like day one where I start with people is to kind of unpack, like, where's your level of belief, you know?
Right.
You can build all this other stuff and take actions all day long, but if the belief isn't there, you're building on a faulty foundation.
Yeah. Right. And you're not just convincing yourself to be a workhorse and learn the task. And I mean, you are doing that, right? But you're also unlocking, like, the talent and the brilliance that you or yourself are kind of suppressing by being just a kid from the other side of the tracks or a paperboy from Cedar,
right?
So like, Kilo didn't just become a producer. He's badass. Right. You know what I mean? He's great. He's really, it's true, man. You're freaking great. And that's the thing, is that, like, you know, people are brilliant. You know what I mean? The average Joe on the street, if you really pick the right part of his brain,
right.
he's genius. Yeah.
You know what I mean? You just got to get that genius that yeah. spark and get there.
My belief is that there, you know, like, on a spiritual level, like, no human is born onto this planet that doesn't have infinite potential and doesn't right. have inherent right. genius and inherent greatness. It's like, at the deepest soulful level, every single, you know, child and baby, like, the minute that they're born, they right. have infinite potential. But it's just the layers of programming
yes.
that,
yes,
you know, it's yes, like all yes. of, like, everything that you're taught, everything that you, you know, grow up to hear about yourself and believe right. about yourself and what you see around you mm-hmm. creates this, you know, this vision of reality and this vision of ourselves. Mm-hmm. But the truth of that inherent genius, that inherent greatness is still inside everybody.
Yeah.
So that's what a lot of what my work is about, is like, yo, let's peel these fucking layers back and let's like re-scramble the eggs and rewire this thing so we can get reconnected with the truth of the infinite potential and possibility that every single human has.
Yeah. And I totally agree, Nick. I think at a young age, we start to be programmed or learn, like, what we can do or what we will be good at or what types of Barbies or fucking NASCARs or, like,
totally.
Whatever it is, like, we're programmed, I can do this, but I can't do that. I think for my benefit of my life, being born without being able to move around and being in a wheelchair, like, I never thought I could do anything. So doing anything was awesome. Oh, wow. So it made it to where it didn't look like a challenge to be a producer or whatever, because it's like, I've never been supposed... when I was born, I wasn't supposed to be able to talk or move or do, like, literally I was supposed to be a vegetable. And to go from being a vegetable in everyone's mind to being this producer, you know, sitting here talking with you today, was all things I was never going to do. So I never had
that. Don't forget drummer in a hardcore band in the middle of
right,
it.
Right, right. Like,
how did you do that?
I've never not succeeded in the goal I wanted because I never had that. I never had the luxury of thinking I could do something. It was always, probably can't do it. I'm going to try anyways. Fuck it. So
that's awesome. Kilo, where, I mean, for one, man, I just want to praise and acknowledge you for a moment because you are just one of the most incredible fucking human beings I have ever had the opportunity.
I agree 100%.
Like, straight up, man, like what you've been able to do for yourself with so much less than what most people have is fucking incredible. And I'm curious, do you, like, was that, that's what I'm saying, was like the mindset always there? Like, where did that come from? Because, like, your mindset is so incredible.
I think I just touched on it a little bit of when you realize life fucking sucks. Not to be a downer to everybody watching this, but when you realize life is not going to be fair, things are going to happen and nothing's going to be given to you. Being able to come to grips with that at a very young age, nothing seems achievable. So nothing's unachievable, right? The yin and the yang. If there's nothing that is given to you easy, you don't expect anything to be easy. So then you go after things. People are like I have friends from back home that are just impressed of the things I've succeeded in, knowing me from a childhood.
Right.
And they are still doing whatever they're doing. And they're like very proud of me and I love them all. But it's like, I never had that grasp of like, I can do this. So there was never, I can't. It was just a try and push as hard as you can and see where it goes. And it's worked out for me. If I could become a one-handed
it's
drummer.
Definitely worked out for you.
I would say so. So, I mean, does that answer your question? Like, I think I just never really had the mindset of whether or, I guess the better way to say it is there was never a thought in my mind whether it would work out or it would not. That was like not a box to be checked.
Almost like,
let's see what happens.
Like you had the benefit of no expectations, right? You were just like, you weren't, people, the only thing people were telling you is like what you can't do. So you're like, well, fuck it. If you think I can't do anything, I'll just do whatever I want and then we'll see how it goes, you know?
I mean, one time, like, for instance, it's a great story. I hope the douchebag is watching right now that said this when I was a kid, which he's probably not, but I was in a Blockbuster with my band after band practice, and we were like, you know, walking around or bowling around. And we were talking about what we were doing with our song or some shit. And this guy was like, came up and he's like, I'm a drummer. Like, who's the drummer in the band? And I told him it was me. And then he was like, no, who's really the drummer? Like, he thought we were joking. And moments like that, to what you were saying, like having people say, I can't do something, was like why I became a very good drummer. Was no one believed me that I was a drummer. Right, so you can't be a mediocre drummer and be have a disadvantage, because then people will be like, he's kind of a drummer, I guess.
That's
it, maybe, you know. So yeah, it motivates you when no one, like even my parents, and I told this in the Icon interview, they bought me like a $200 plywood looking drum set. Like, because I said I wanted to play the drums, and so they didn't want to say no, but they were thinking to themselves, he's not going to be able to
spend $2,000 on a kit.
We're not going to tell him no, but we're also not going to spend a bunch of money on something he probably can't do.
Right.
So, So even my parents thought I couldn't do it. Come find out, I actually became a very good drummer. So,
So dope. So
it's a good journey. Yeah, that's actually the first time our audience that doesn't know who I am knows that I can't walk.
Yeah, so, we never like talk about it. It's funny.
I never had a time that I thought to talk about it. In a sense, I guess that kind of is a way to link in what Nick was saying about identity to like why I've been successful, is because I don't even think of that. Me and Bob don't talk about me being in a wheelchair in every episode, because in my mind, this is just me. This is what life feels like for me. I don't know what it feels like for you. So I don't think, I'm this way and you're that way. I just think kind of I don't know how to explain it. You know what I'm saying?
It's just so inspiring to me because so many people are coming up with excuses to why they can't do the things that they want to do. You know, people that have the use of both of their arms and both of their legs, and people that like come from good backgrounds and have resources and have support. And it's just like, yo, like fucking get over it. Like go get after it, man. Like if Kilo can do it, you can too. Shut Once the fuck again, up and I get after your good. Goals. Let's go.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would go back to my point before is when like, when you are told in every way, shape, and form, you can't do it. You don't have to come up with reasons why you can't do it. Right. So the reason of you not being able to do it becomes an external force, right? Rather than when we come up with the reasons that we can't do something, it's an internal thing. But when people are telling us we can't do it, we don't have that internal, or I didn't have that internal monologue of I can't do it.
Right.
Because I never had to put it into my head. For instance, people have told me I'm funny and I could be a comedian. And in that sense, I tell myself I can't do it. For some weird reason, I always go, I can't do that. But it's because I know
one particular thing you've chosen to be insecure about.
It's funny I say that, but it's the same as people saying, coming up with reasons why they can't do things. I have one instance in my life. The one thing everyone's always told me I could do my entire life, I've never tried because I'm too afraid. I guess the best, I think this kind of loops back to what we were saying before. Like, what was I going to say? I do this in every episode. Once an episode, I forget what I was talking about. It's like the one thing everyone thought I could do and tells me I can do, I totally don't even think about doing. So it's everything that people have told me, like Nick knows, it's like I longboard, like skateboard, longboard. I used to skateboard, like play the drums. Like I do crazy shit, but it's because it's the shit no one ever told me I could do. So it's like, right. Why don't I try to find out? And the one thing, the only thing in my life people have said, you could definitely do that. I'm like, no, too afraid. So I guess I know what most people feel like about being an artist or being a musician or doing whatever they want is it is a weird feeling. When you know you could do it, then you have the opportunity to fail. But when you don't know you can do it, there is no fail because you already think you fail.
Right, right.
Yeah. You know? Got nothing to lose.
Right. That's a great way to put it. I have nothing to lose in any endeavor I make. You know, it's like I was born and lost. I already lost the game. So why don't I, like the teams that play like through the game, like, and they're like the Jets or the Browns or whatever, and they suck, but they play through the game and they do these really fun plays and they do all this cool shit because they know they're going to lose. The game is over. It's 40-0. Yeah. Now let's have fun. And
might
I
as
think,
well do some backflips while we're on.
Yeah. So I already lost. Now let me enjoy my life. Let me have fun because I already know I lost. Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, there's a lot in what you said, and I think it's you know, and if somebody could just you know, people wanted to like kind of pick apart sentence by sentence some of the lessons you teach there, it's pretty impressive. You know, one thing I think about too is you know, the one, you know, Kilo and I have we bonded on a number of things over the last year. We've known each other for about a year now, and one of the things is both of us are very close to our parents, right? And I I think that that's a, and I you know, I'm not kidding. I grew up poor like you, Nick, and it was just a paper boy from upstate New York, but I had my father who's passed away and my mother's still alive, but they always kind of, when literally the world had no expectations for me, I didn't have your disadvantages at all, Kilo. I'm not trying to compare, but saying that, but I didn't, you know, I was smart, but I had no money. That was my story, you know? And my parents were just like, we can't help you, but you can do anything you want. You know, right. You're capable of anything. Right. Like, all right, well, shit, I'll just go rock on, you know?
Yeah.
But right. So I don't know. There's, I guess it's that freedom. I guess what we're getting at is that, you know, trying to find the freedom to be yourself early on and then just kind of die. Yeah. On, you know?
And that having that voice of your parents saying, You can do it. You can do anything that you want. Yeah. I think that that's one of the most important things. Like I would rather have that than have grown up with money, but right. have parents that said, oh, you'll never be anything and you can't do anything, which unfortunately, that's a lot of what a lot of people have heard, right? And especially right. artists, especially artists that are going against the grain of yeah. what their parents want them to do.
What do you mean you're not going to college, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Like, oh, right. you want to do that? Like, that's so competitive. You'll never succeed at that, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's the poisonous thoughts right. that get implanted in our mind and that's where the work is to be done is to try to combat those thoughts and try to right. replace those thoughts with those, you know, more like, you know, like with, which actually is more aligned with the truth that like, yeah, you actually can do anything. Anybody can do anything. And the only thing that's right. stopping you is you and that little voice inside of your head, you know? So, yeah, we got to work on that stuff.
90-year-old Captain Kirk just went into space. 90-year-old yeah, Captain
right.
Kirk.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
If that freaking old yeah. guy could go to space. Then right. anything. You can do anything you want.
And right. like and that's a great point. Like it's never too late, you know? Like if right. you want to be an artist and you're 65 and you know you have a dream that you never right. went after, like fucking go for it. Like why if as long as you're still alive and breathing, like you've still got time to go for it. And that's probably one of the biggest things. You know, I see people that are like young that are still in their 20s and they're like, "Oh man, it's like it's too late for me to be an artist," you know? Mm-hmm. You're like, what? Just because you're not like 16, you're not 18. They see other young people succeeding and they think that that it's too late for them. And yeah. That's one of the biggest challenges I think a lot of our artists go through is feeling like, sure. oh, it's too late. I'm too old. It's
tell,
like,
tell them to give man. Me a call. I just got a record contract at 51 years old. So rock
yeah,
on.
Even yeah, at exactly.
my age, sometimes I think that way, even though it's yeah. not true. And I know it. I think like, oh no, do I know what the new cool thing is? Like these kids know way more about social media than me, blah, blah, blah. Am I going to be able to succeed? Which I am, but it's like, even my age, and I'm only 32, I think like that. I do think like, oh shit, like, am I too old? Is EDM yeah. for 20-year-olds? Like, which I'm wrong. You know, you mentioned David Guetta, fucking Tiesto, oh, like fucking ancient now. Like, and those yeah. are like the best, you know? Right. So yeah we
Guetta,
all
Guetta was,
I fall into that.
Guetta was in his 40s when he got signed and when I started working with him at Capitol Records. Like he was in his 40s already, you know? So right. all you little 20, 30 year old somethings, shut the hell up. Get
yeah,
to work.
Just get to work.
Work right on that grind today.
Yeah. yeah. And Kilo, you mentioned this also though, like you said earlier, you're like, well shit, I might as well have fun. And I think that that's another right. really important piece of it as well is like having fun. And that's something I'm trying to get right. more connected to as well. Like I get so serious. The older we get, I don't know. I'll just generalize. I feel like as we become, you know, older and kind of more adult, like we just get so serious and it's like, oh, I gotta grind and like build my career and put my stuff out or whatever. And it's like, oh, we gotta stay in tune with the play and the fun. It's like,
right.
what if we're missing the point? What if all of life is purely just about having fucking fun? And anytime that we're not having fun, we're missing the mark, you know? So like, let's get back into that.
Yeah, you did my interview and some of our fans have heard my interview. I talk about that exact thing. Like, have fucking fun. Like, yeah. realize that life is shit. So you may as well have fun. I don't think I said it like that, but you know what I mean. I don't. Well, I didn't memorize my own interview, but like I said, yeah. I make this music so that people realize life is fun or something like that.
Yeah, reminds me, when
we talked to Malachi on one of the first or second episode of this.
Yeah.
We asked a question, something about, you know, if you could hang, I asked him, it was because we'll be doing this pretty shortly. I think we asked these random questions of our guests at the end of the show. And the question I asked Malachi was, if you could hang out with anybody from history, present history, past history, whatever, you decide, just anybody, who would it be? And he said the Dalai Lama, right? And I just thought it was a great answer. And then we started talking about that. One thing, and this is the reason I bring this up, if you see the Dalai Lama ever, in any circumstance, in a photo, in a video, in a book cover, he's always smiling. The Dalai Lama always smiles.
Right.
The guy he hasn't been able to go to his home country, which he is the spiritual leader of, for like 50 years. He still smiles all the freaking time.
Right.
And that's the thing, man. you know, right. Embrace that moment, find the joy in it and live, you know, it's fantastic.
Yeah. And before we get to the random questions, there's something I want to touch on that Nick said earlier that I think is a little nugget of golden goose shit, like we talked about in the first episode. But he was talking about shit, what was it? I forgot again, but I'm gonna remember. Oh man. Oh no, maybe I won't remember.
All right.
Oh well. keep talking and I'll remember. Don't worry, I'll remember. Well, I remember. I got it. It's back. Don't worry. I got it again. No, I lost it again. Don't worry about it. Okay, I got it. Nope, it's gone. Sorry.
All right. Well,
if I think of it,
we'll get back to you.
Hurry, I thought of it. Okay. The whole celebrating your victories thing is something that I am very guilty of not being able to do. And Bob had said to me in the past, he goes, you write albums like I write singles. I remember that vividly.
Yeah.
And that's because I am guilty of doing the wrong thing there, where it's like, I'm never satisfied. When I write a song and it comes out, my parents and my friends want to all like have a good time, enjoy themselves and party and like be very excited. They're like, aren't you proud of yourself? And I'm like, no, because I'm not where I want to be. I am very guilty of being very bad at that. That's something I'm going to work on not doing. I thought I will never be successful if I become, Nick, this is what I think, or I used to think until today. I'm never going to get to where I want to be if I get satisfied with these victories, right? That's where my mindset was. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I wanted to point that out.
Here's the thing is the energy, when you celebrate, there's a certain, you're living within a certain type of energy, right? And like when you celebrate, it's like, it's a feeling. There's a feeling that you get of, and that is, it's a very positive, energized, stoked kind of feeling. Mm-hmm. And so what type of energy do you think is going to drive you forward further and faster? Having energy where you're feeling pumped and excited and stoked, or having or living an energy where you feel like you're not good enough and you're shit. Right. And you're not where you want to be. You know what I mean?
Right,
like that,
right.
the potency of that type of energy is very, very different. So we think that if I live in this state of feeling like I'm not good enough and I'm not there yet, then that's going to drive me to like get there faster. But it's almost, it's just like the quality of the fuel. The quality of the fuel is fucking way different. When you're feeling like, yo, I'm fucking in it. Let's go, baby. And yes, I'm celebrating. I feel good. I feel happy. That type of energy is going to carry you so much further, you know? So that's why we want to try to come back to that and live in that state as much as we can.
Yeah. Now that I won't feel guilty if I do celebrate, I think I'm going to do that now. I won't feel like I'm going to be a failure if I celebrate this one victory. That's great.
I got
something out of today, and I wasn't even, I'm interviewing you, and it's like you life coached me without trying. Good job.
Somehow you
found the one flaw in my game and made me immediately realize I was wrong the way I thought.
You knew what you signed up for. You know what you
were getting. Yeah, exactly. So this is the point in most episodes where we all will go around, like each one of us gets to ask a random question for the two hosts of the show. One of us will ask a industry, which yours is life coaching type of question, and then one will ask a random thing like, what's your favorite bottled water company, or what, you know, whatever, and then you get to ask. So we all have to answer all three of the questions, and we all three get to ask a question. So
cool.
Go ahead, Bob, you start us off today.
Oh no. You have your industry question, right? You were going to do
Okay, sure. I'll start it off. Nick, if you were to have one opportunity to affect someone's life at their worst moment, when they're at their last place where they might have to call the suicide hotline, and your only interaction was you could show them one song, what would it be?
Oh, damn. I had to play one song for them on the fucking,
like that's the verge. That's the one thing you can do. You can't explain it to them. You can just hopefully give them something that has affected you in a positive way.
That's a tough one, man. It's got to be something. I'm so stumped on that. What would that be? Can Bob go first? Bob answer first. Come back
I'll
to me.
If you want, if Bob,
go,
if Bob,
go ahead. You go ahead, and then I'll go. Then.
I got to give this some thought. That's a deep-ass question, man.
The way I wrapped my mind around the question, while we were talking, actually, that might be why I was forgetting things, was like, in that instance, what would affect me, right? If they didn't be able to explain anything, what's one song that I hear that if I'm in a bad mood and I want to, you know, murder the flowers for being flowers today, like what one song will immediately snap me out of it instantaneously, because you want it to be fast if they're in that state of mind, is this song by, I don't know his name. Watsky is his name, called Hey Asshole, where it's like this one song talking about like, hey asshole, see the sun is shining, but you are not smiling, and I don't know why. Like, it's basically an internal monologue between him and this girl talking about, like, life is beautiful whether we know it or not, and you're an asshole because you are choosing not to see it. And I feel in every, even in the worst moments of my life, and some of you guys know, and Nick and Bob know, like, I had necrotizing pneumonia and almost died, and life was shit, and you know, life was hard, and I had a lot of struggles, but in those very horrible moments, that song always made me go, that's right. There are things I can be happy about right now. So there's my answer. Go look up that song by Watsky, Hey Asshole. So
I've got mine as well. Mine came to me, which is, I don't even know the name of the song, but that Bob Marley song that's like, so baby, don't worry.
It's called Three Little Birds. The reason it's called that is because if you see three robins or something on your front yard, if you see three robins, it's supposed to be a good omen. It's a good luck. It's your, everything's going to be all right if you see three little birds. So there you go.
That's
a great choice, man.
That is a great answer. That would definitely help me in those moments.
Right on. I have to answer, right?
Yes, you do.
My answer is probably weird because it's not a particularly motivational or happy or inspiring song, but it's what I would want to hear if I was on the brink.
Right.
Bob Dylan, I Shall Be Released, which is, again, sounds funny because it sounds like, you know, but the idea that if you know, you're not familiar with the song, it's one of the greatest songs of all time. And, it's basically Dylan singing from the perspective of a guy in prison, but it's metaphoric. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He didn't actually go to prison, but he's looking at, and he's, you know, any day now, I shall be released. And he's like, you know, I see my reflection, you know, beyond these walls and things like. And it's that. It's like everything is hell, but I'm going to be over that wall someday. You know what I mean? Right. And that's probably the what I would. What I would choose.
Perfect. Yeah, that's great.
It would probably fail. It would probably only make me happy, and it would probably make somebody else want to kill themselves.
If I'm going to say a song called Hey Asshole is what I think might be coming up, automatically, just by the name, you're going to go, that's not going to help me. Go fuck yourself. But it would. So
there you go.
Go ahead, Bob. It's your turn.
Oh, yeah. So does. Yeah, my question. I do have one. All right. So, Nick, what is. Before this, so we'll just assume this was the best thing that's happened all day. But before you got here to talk to us today, what was the best thing that happened to you today, or that you experienced, the best thing of your day today?
The best thing of my day today, I would just say, is waking up next to my girlfriend.
Yeah, that's an answer, man.
Just to be a little sappy, but you know, it was raining here in San Diego, one of those cold. You know, cold, rainy days. And so just to, wake up next to my partner, it's like, all right.
Good answer.
Yeah, doesn't get any better than that.
Cool. Keila.
Nice. I think mine would have to be, I know it's going to sound weird at first, but let me explain. I started the new series of Dexter, like the Dexter New Blood, or I don't know what it's called. But why that is impactful to me is because Dexter was my friend Ronnie, who I'm sure all of you have heard this by now, who died, my bassist who died. It was his favorite show. And so every single episode he would watch with his mom, who he didn't really get along with, but they bonded behind that. And I haven't been able to watch it, the old one, since he died. I didn't even finish it because, like, I hadn't caught up yet to it when it ended. And so my mind was like, fuck you, I'm not going to watch it. So I finally let myself last night because my YouTube wasn't working. That's funny that something not working was why a good thing happened. But I started watching it finally, and it just kind of connected me with my friend again, type of thing. It wasn't a sad moment at all. It was like an exciting, like, you're dead, obviously. You don't get to watch this. I don't think if they have TVs in hell, maybe you're watching it. But, like, I get to watch it, so I should sit here and enjoy it, you know, because you don't necessarily get that chance now. So that was a very good moment to realize I can do things that remind me of him, and I don't have to prepare myself with a box of tissues and a bunch of chocolate ice cream. Right. So, cool. Yeah. Right on, what about man. You, Bob? What about you, that. Bobby?
You know, I probably should think of answers, questions that I have good answers for. Mine is the best thing. I mean, I had a pretty uneventful day, except I did get my I got my booster shot today. So there you go. It was probably the best move I made today. Other than that, I don't know. I watched the Today Show and then did some work on my computer and then came here and did this. So yeah, cool. Let's call it that. The booster shot is probably the best thing that happened today.
So Nick, do you have a question prepared for us? Like I
do. I have a great question.
Awesome.
Cool.
The question is, would you rather have one testicle that's the size of a coconut or 13 regular sized testicles?
Well, I'm going to answer first.
Fantastic.
So that my answer doesn't get confused with yours. Wouldn't it both be the same amount of space? Like, wouldn't
that's what I'm thinking is the space.
So
right?
Either one sucks for me because I'm sitting down all the time. So I don't pick either because it's basically going to be the same mass of space.
You got to choose. You got to make a choice here. It's one or the other.
Did you say 13?
13 normal size.
Well, I love that it's an odd number too.
The size.
I'm gonna go with
a baker's dozen.
I'll go with 13 because 13 is like a scary number, and I'm into horror movies, so I'd like to have a horror movie number of testicles. Apparently, so okay. There we go. 13. Good job.
I'll answer it because that is, I think that is obviously the right answer, but for a different reason. Okay. I'm thinking displacement of space, right?
Oh,
you got one big you get one coconut in your pants, that's just gonna be there all the time. So you got 13 little ones, you know, they'll move around, they'll get out of your way.
Yeah. I'm with both you guys. It's gotta be 13. That's
we figured out it's unanimous. We know the answer to last question now.
You come away with anything today.
One or 13. Yeah. We know the answer, guys. We figured it out for you. You can send us our tags on PayPal, whatever, because we know guys. Secret. Don't worry about it.
That's great.
Man. Anyway, okay, this comes to the point of the show where we're about to say goodbye, but we want to give everybody, all the artists, an opportunity to say anything they want to the audience. Anything at all that you want to say to the audience, the floor is yours, Nick.
I would just say thank you. If you made it this far, thank you for tuning in. Keep up the good work. Go back and rewatch this episode. Take some notes. Practice some of the things that we talked about. And keep supporting these guys with the awesome work that they're doing with this podcast, because they're the shit.
Well, thanks, man. Thank you, sir. We really were very happy to get a hold of you and be able to have you on our show and have your kind of wonderful energy and input on things. Absolutely. Because you have always, whether it was when you came over after my friend died or whether it was like after I went to the hospital, you've always had a different perspective of anything, even if we weren't talking about what we do. Because when we hang out, we don't talk about music. We just fucking eat burgers and have fun. So I appreciate your wonderful perspective. And I know that it's gonna bless someone's life. If you got something out of this in whatever comment box you're watching this on, please let us know. Let Nick know, let us know what helped you because we took the time today to hang out and just shoot the shit. So
right on, man.
Yeah. All thanks right. for having me, guys.
Yeah, man.
Thank you so much for coming. It's really been a pleasure to meet you, and I really enjoyed the conversation. So thank you.
Likewise. Rock great on, to meet you, buddy. Bob.
All right, guys.
All right. Take care.
Adios, everybody.
Hey, let's take a minute.